Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle, this hour on the show. We'll talk about the state of the city of Columbus. Mayor Michael Coleman joins us. We'll discuss the city's new curfew beginning June 5th. Kids will have to be off the street by midnight or sooner for younger children. We'll talk about the new neighborhood surveillance cameras designed to reduce crime, the proposed streetcars along High Street, the new Central City farmers markets, and the mayor's plans to make Columbus a hip and cool city, America's 21st century city. Welcome back, Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman. Good to have you here.
And it's great to be back, and I understand I'm the first guest in this new studio, and it truly is a fabulous place. And I had the opportunity to take the tour, and I saw your private office, Fred, and
it's a mess, isn't it?
It's a lot of books, a lot of newspapers. I went through all your drawers and everything. This is a great place.
Yeah, well, thanks. You are our first guest, and we're happy to have you here in the new studio. And we'll have the grand opening from 10 to 2 on Monday when President Gordon Gee will be with us at the university. Well, we're at 614-292-8513. We're going to make Columbus a hip and cool city, huh?
Well, here's the deal. For years, I've lived in this community for 28 years now, and for years I hear this thing that really gets to me, and there's two words, Cowtown.
Yeah.
And we are neither cow nor are we town. We're a young, vibrant, energetic city, and you know what? And I'm tired of hearing it, and I think our people need to be focused on the future. I think at one time we could have described ourselves as a cow town, but we're now the 15th largest city in the country. We're the only city in the state of Ohio that's growing. We have our challenges, but our economy is growing. We are truly one of the best cities in the entire country. We have this young and talented crew that is growing and prospering in the city of Columbus as well. And I'm proud of this city, and we ought to be proud of it, and we are who we think we are. If we think we are a cow town, then by golly, we are. But you know what? I don't think we are. I think we're vibrant, alive, active, and the best cities are those cities that are the best days are ahead of them, and Columbus is a city where its best days are ahead of us, not behind us.
All right. Let's take a look at some of the proposals, Mr. Mayor, from your State of the City speech. One proposal is for the streetcar line, these 21st century streetcars that will move along High Street. And you're going to have a meeting next week where you're going to talk about ways of paying for the streetcars. How are we going to pay for the streetcar line?
Well, I encourage you and everyone to come to this March 27th event where we're going to bring in the financial experts that have been working on this for several months now and the planners to unveil what our proposal is to pay for it. But I'll give you a preview. And because we're on the Fred Enderle Show and we're at a new studio.
All right.
The preview is that there is a clear economic benefit in the area, in the zone in which the streetcar is located. Three blocks on either side or thereabouts. And we're going to create a benefit zone. And the benefit is jobs, housing, opportunities, commercial development, retail development, housing development, all up and down High Street and within this zone. It becomes a major economic powerhouse for the city. At a time where we really need economic development, this will help bring that
along. How do we know, by the way, that the streetcar line will give us all that?
Well, we've done a study. We've compared and contrasted and examined other cities, in particular Portland, that has experience, real-life experience on what the streetcars have done for that community. It has been so successful in that community that they are extending lines throughout neighborhoods all over the city. And I think streetcars in Columbus is a window of opportunity to other rail options in the city. And let me talk about this
for a second. Can I ask you, in terms of paying for this, how much will the streetcar line cost? And how will
about $100 million.
And how will we pay for it?
And we'll talk about it on March 27th. But the idea is
about 80% of it
will be paid through the benefit zone. So those who benefit the most will pay for 80% of it. And we'll talk about the mechanics of that on March 27th.
I was going to ask you how that works. You say the benefit zone, 80% of the people will pay that. How would that work?
We'll talk about it on March 27th. Okay. I won't give you too much. I mean, you know, nobody come to Mars 27.
You didn't give me anything.
Right. I got the benefit zone, those 80% of the cost associated with the operations and the construction of the streetcar will be paid for by those who benefit the most. That is the concept that we're proposing here.
In terms of the fares, in terms of taxation, or in terms of?
To be new revenues through that benefit zone.
Because of the increased commercial activity?
Yes.
Sales taxes, increased sales
taxes? Well, we'll talk about all that later, Fred. I feel my arm being twisted a little bit. Ouch.
Okay.
But let me just talk about this issue about where we are as a community on this, on just mass transit. I think we have to, as a community, begin to focus on the issues of mass transit and public transit more. Because I'm telling you, these gas prices are, frankly, it's not going to stop. They're going to go up. And we need to consider other options. The average family soon is not going to be able to go to work because they won't be able to afford to go to work because of the cost of gas these days. Now, I haven't looked at the gas prices the past few days, but last week there was gas prices in Columbus at $3.60 a gallon. Now, I guarantee you, come election time, those gas prices will go down. But after election, those gas prices are going to go right back up in the $4 range is my prediction. And I see what's happening in the world, and I see what's happening in Europe, for example, and it's going to be here in the United States as well. In the Netherlands, gasoline in February was at $9.42. I think it was in Great Britain, it was $8.57 just a couple of weeks ago. And that's going to happen in Columbus. It's going to happen in our country. And we need to begin to focus on other means to get around our community sooner or later, and I think sooner than later, unless we get a grip on this, that our people won't be able to get to work. Our businesses will start to go down, and I think our city will be in jeopardy. We need to be competitive, and we need to make sure our people get to work, our businesses thrive, and we need to look at this issue of mass transit in a much more critical way. And unless we do, we're not going to be a city that's going to be competitive.
You know, of course, the question becomes, how do we finance this? When you think of additional mass transit, I think the first thing you think about is an increase in terms of the number of routes for COTA, the number of buses.
Yeah.
But voters in the past have rejected sales tax increases that would have done exactly that. So if you think of expanding COTA, if the voters are not ready to vote the funds, how do you do it?
Well, we're not going to have a sales tax increase with respect to the streetcar. That's something I've said we're not going to do. And come to March 27th, we'll talk about how we're going to build this thing.
Sure, but that's only on one line on High Street.
That's true. But, you know, we have to look at other things too, Fred. For example, we don't need to be buying automobiles to get eight miles a gallon. It doesn't make sense anymore. We need to acquire vehicles that are high mileage and different kinds of fuel combinations. We need to practice energy savings in our own lives, and we have to move towards public transit. We have to. Otherwise, we will not be prepared for the future. That's as simple as that.
Is there a way to get a hold of a light rail system of the kind that St. Louis has, for example, that's so successful, and how would we finance that? I guess the
question
always
comes back to financing. Well, that's a big question, because I think what streetcars do in Columbus, here's how I think Columbus citizens think, and I'm with them 100%. You have to see it, touch it, feel it, understand that it works before we go to the next level. And what streetcars do is open that window of opportunity to go to that next level of light rail in this community. I think we need light rail in this city. And it is a question, though, of how we finance it. But I think once people have an opportunity to ride and understand the efficiencies and the benefits of rail in this community, there'll be a demand for light rail in this city. And we will have to move more towards that, and we'll have to figure out a way to pay for it. It is now light rail. You know, suburban light rail is not figured out yet. We are figuring out streetcars.
Do we have a prediction here, Mr. Mayor? When will we see the streetcars on our high street?
When?
Yeah.
I think it could be. I'd like to get it done by 2012, 2013, in that range. It's a lot of work, and I think we got a pretty good plan on how to do it.
Streetcar will run from where to where?
The idea is to bring it all the way to The Ohio State University, and down High Street, through neighborhoods. We'd like to go all the way to German Village, but 7071 is being reconstructed. And that's going to be about a 10-year period of that reconstruction, 5, 7, 8-year period. So we're going to have a terminus for this phase to the courthouse on High Street. We also want to take it from the Arena District all the way to the Discovery District, to CCAD and beyond, down the Grand Hospital as well, and Columbus State in that range. So there'll be a crosstown version and a High Street version. And then I think over time we'll look at streetcars streetcars in neighborhoods beyond there. And this city was built by streetcars. Now, this is not a trolley system, streetcars. It is sleek, modern, contemporary vehicles.
We don't have overhead wires.
There will be overhead wires. It'll be electrified.
Okay.
They'll be electrified.
Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman with us, 614-292-8513. Let's go to you, callers. Here is David. Hello, David.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Mayor.
Hi. How are you, David?
Very good. Thank you. I've been reading a lot and hearing you personally talk about bikeways.
Yes.
And I'd like to turn this town into a bike town.
Me too, buddy.
We have a lot of good potential thus far, and I've heard different numbers that have been thrown out, and I'm a little bit confused. Around July 2007, you announced the Bicentennial Bikeway Plan, and I think you mentioned something in the neighborhood of $50 million possibly floated for the bond package. And on your March 13th recent speech, you mentioned $20 million, which would include the bond package. And on the bikeway plans that I've seen put out there to the public, the draft in December 2007 said $73 million, and I understand that number's gone up even more. So what is the city proposing for the bikeway plans as far as the forthcoming bicentennial bond package?
What we're proposing is $20
million.
$20 million. $20 million for the period between now and 2012. There's another figure that extends beyond 2012, which is much greater than – beyond 2012, which is much greater than $20 million. Which represents about $4.5 million a year to create bikeways in this community. Both on-street efforts, where we'll have to reconstruct many intersections in the city of Columbus, as well as off-street efforts that will provide for bike paths around the city and connecting up bike paths around the city. That is not including some of the work that we're hoping to see out of Metro Parks and some of our other partners. So if you add it all up, it's going to be more than $20 million. I'm just talking about what the city of Columbus is going to do, which is $20 million. It could be much larger than that once you bring in all the other players, all the other funders that engage in the construction of these activities.
Mr. Mayor, in your State of the City speech, you talked about 54 miles of new on-street bike routes. And the question I had for you is...
On-street and off-street.
And off-street as well, as well as 49 miles of bike trails.
Right. So it's about 100 or so.
Yeah, all total. But what does this mean in terms of, let's say, somebody wants to get to work down High Street or Old Natanji River Road? Do you have to widen High Street? I mean, that would be an enormous project.
It'll mean we'll have to have bike lanes in some of our streets. I don't know if it'll be on High Street, but there will be on streets that the bikeways folks are putting together that plan right now. And we're going to have to make the intersection safer for pedestrians and bikers. And I think it's important to do. And the reason I think this is an important thing to do is because, well, first of all, we need to celebrate our flatness. Flat is good. You know, we don't have mountains, we don't have oceans, but we are a flat city, and that makes, you know, this kind of alternative form of transportation, bicycles, very possible in our city. Secondly, bike transportation is something everybody, most people can do, can engage in. Thirdly, is that this whole issue of alternative transportation is important. Other ways to get to work and to do things.
But I was wondering, you say it might not include High Street, but wouldn't it have to?
Maybe. It might be. I mean, it's going to be up to the planners.
North-South corridor, I would think.
Right. There'll be a North-South. They have to be.
Yeah. But I wonder, again, wouldn't that involve widening High Street? Because when you look at it, there's no real room for it.
Well, that's assuming it's going to be on High Street. I don't know. You know, we'll let the experts develop that plan on that.
What would be an alternative? I mean, it would have to be Olentangy or Indianola. One of those. So it's a massive project, I would guess.
It is. Yeah. It's very, very important. It's a massive project. But I think we can become a bike city. It's not going to happen overnight. This is just a first phase between now and 2012. And then after 2012, there's other phases that total up much more resources over that period of time. But what I've talked about is what I think we can do. And what I think we can realistically do in that time frame, understanding our system.
David, thanks for your question. Let's go on to Rick. Rick, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello. Am I on?
You are.
Oh, yes. It's my understanding that these cameras that catch people going through them, the red light cameras, that they're manufactured in Australia, and a huge percentage of the revenue actually does not even benefit Columbus, but goes to those manufacturers. You want to be a cool city. To me, that's not cool.
Well, Mr. Mayor, according to a report on our station this morning from our Steve Brown, a reporter, he said that there's a study out of Florida State University, which is a study of all the studies done on red light cameras, that says two things. Number one, there's nothing other than anecdotal evidence that they actually reduce accidents, and that number two, they may promote accidents in terms of rear-end collisions when somebody stops abruptly because they know there's a red light camera there. He also reported that the owners of the system or the leases of the system get, what, $1.2 million. The city gets $400,000. And these studies, anyway, suggested that they're primarily a revenue-generating situation and not a safety measure.
Well, I think studies can say whatever they want to say. I'm going to tell you what we found. We have found that that these red light cameras have, in fact, reduced collisions within intersections. That's a fact. You could take what happened before and what's happened since, and there are not the collisions that take place in these intersections. There's no debate about that, number one.
You've got the data here.
The data.
All right.
The data is undisputable.
And not an increase in rear-end collisions.
That I don't know about.
Okay.
But it's undisputable that there are fewer car accidents, no matter what kind of accident, regardless of the accident, at those intersections. So the data is clear. It's black and white, and there's no debate on that. Number two, it is not a revenue generator for the city of Columbus. If it had been, we'd be making a heck of a lot more revenue than we are. It is a safety component, and it has saved lives. And number three, I don't know where the cameras are made. I honestly do not know where these cameras are made. We entered into a contract with whatever the vendor is, not knowing whether or not this would be successful or not. So the risk we put on the camera company, not on the city. Now, we may not have the same kind of deal in the future. We just don't know that right now. But going into it originally, the thought was the city should not take the risk, the financial risk on this. And we shifted that risk to the camera operators or the camera companies. So I think they've turned out there in a way that we have, in fact, reduced collisions. It has made a difference, and frankly, it saved lives. I think it works.
Rick, follow-up question quickly.
Yeah, just to point out that I don't like them. They remind me of a police state. That's just my point.
Okay, Rick, thanks for your call. Let's talk a little bit about the neighborhood surveillance cameras, Mr. Mayor. You call them safety cameras.
Yes.
They generally, how would they work? Neighborhood special events, et cetera?
There's three kinds of cameras we're looking at. The first kind of camera is cameras that are movable cameras that we can use at festivals, in downtown, and they're on in vehicles. And they can be moved from one place to another. And if we need them at a special circumstance in a neighborhood, they can be deployed there on a temporary basis. That's one. The second kind of camera is at our rec centers around the city. And I think we need to keep our children safe as we can and understand what's going on, be able to see what's happening on public property. And the third kind of camera is a camera that we're going to experiment with in certain neighborhoods in a pilot scenario. And these cameras will be focused on the public right-of-way, the public easements, recognizing that we're not interested in anything that happens outside of public easements. We have had some experimentation with graffiti cameras. Those graffiti cameras have resulted in, we put them, the graffiti cameras, in places where there have been graffiti. And in every instance, because we advertise where the camera is, in every instance, yeah. Graffiti has been reduced substantially or eliminated entirely. And that's a good thing. So we're going to experiment with a couple of neighborhoods. There's a lot of technology involved in this, and our goal is to see how that works before we expand it further.
Now, in terms of the cameras in the neighborhoods, I think the statement's been made that it's not that police officers are going to be monitoring these cameras and sitting there watching them. Is it the videotape or a solid state, a record afterward that you can go
it's
back and review? Is that the idea?
A record after, as well as we want people to know the camera's there. This is not a secret camera. Mm-hmm. I want the bad guys to know that it's right there. It's looking at you. So if you commit a crime right here, we got you. And that has a tendency to deter criminal activity. And we've seen around other cities where that has, in fact, occurred. In Chicago, there's been a 30% reduction citywide. In some cities, even further than that. And we will not have police officers sitting there looking at these cameras. That is not a good use of their time. This is just a tool in an arsenal of tools that will be available to our Columbus police officers to help keep our neighborhoods safer.
Ideally, how many neighborhood cameras would you like to see around the city?
I think we want to experiment with the pilot program in the neighborhood first. And we want to work out the kinks. We need to understand what we're getting into before we begin a process of a citywide camera effort.
All right. Callers, hang right on the line. We're going to take a little break here for a couple of announcements. We're with Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman. We're talking about the state of the city and many of the issues that you raise on the phone at 614-292-8513. And we'll be back after these messages at WOSU 820, NPR News. Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820. I'm Fred Anderle. We're talking about the state of the city with Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman, 614-292-8513. Callers, let's go right back to you with Adam is on the line. Hi.
Hey, what's going on? First, Fred, I just wanted to let you know I've always seen you as a monument to interviewers, to be honest. You've always been so fair. I've heard you go into many a sticky situation and come out very non-biased. So kudos to you on that.
Well, appreciate that. Thanks.
I only listen to people. You know, I'm a salesman by trade. In any event, you know, I hear what the mayor's saying, and I've actually met Mr. Coleman, Mayor Coleman, on a couple of different occasions and publicity things, and I see a lot of gimmicks. You know, we've got this trolley system going on, you know, and we wanted to have this urban renewal, so we built a bunch of condos that are sitting and not selling. You know, meanwhile, I'm driving through Cleveland Avenue and Sullivan, as we like to affectionately call the Sully. You know, going through a lot of these play-driven areas, and I understand that any city is going to have these play areas. You know, but what, you know, one thing I would love to give props on is the Gateway project. That was fantastic. It looks beautiful. You're driving through it, and it's gorgeous. You look up, and it's a fantastic thing. I've lived in the city my whole life.
Mm-hmm. So, question for the mayor.
The question is, what are we going to do to you know, really bring up these areas that are really bringing our city down? You know, what are we going to do there?
Okay.
Well, let me tell you what we are doing. And this has been an emphasis, a focus, and a passion for me. And let me start off by saying these things aren't gimmicks. They're city changing. And we need to change. We need to do things better for all of us. Now, with respect to some of the urban areas, the saying in my office is we grow outward with a plan, inward with a passion. And we're very, very focused on urban areas. And I don't just drive through them. I walk through them and be and very much a part of them. Now, we have taken certain areas where we have made significant transformation, like that one street you talk about you drove through just a few years ago on the corner of Cleveland 11th was the definition of blight in America. We have now transformed it into a urban jewel that people come from around the country to see how do we do this. It is a phenomenon.
For those who haven't seen it, could you give us a little description?
It is an area that at one time, you know, we call it the Four Corners Project, but it's the gateway into Linden. And it begins at Cleveland and 11th. And you know, one corner was a old school that had been abandoned, and another corner was a carryout store that sold more than just milk to children in the community. There was another corner where there was some fatalities through gunshots. Another corner was a motorcycle gang. We developed the entire area, not just the corners, but the entire area. Now we have the first office jobs in generations in that neighborhood. We have the first urban transit center ever in the city of Columbus. We have a restaurant and office jobs being developed, as well as new housing in the area as well, and shopping as well, and a community center in addition to that. These aren't gimmicks. These are transformative efforts. Now, do we have things more that we need to do? Yes, we do. And we understand that, and we're acting on that. The biggest problem right now in urban America and in the city of Columbus is our is the foreclosure issue that has faced our state, our nation, and our city. These foreclosures turn into vacant and abandoned properties. And we started a program called Home Again, and we set aside $25 million to begin to address it. The purpose of Home Again is to do five things: to help prevent vacant and abandoned properties, number one. Number two is to acquire vacant and abandoned properties, rehabilitate vacant and abandoned properties, and demolish vacant and abandoned properties that can't be rehabilitated. And the fifth thing is enforcement. And the enforcement part is the toughest part because that's the one we have to deal with the courts. Now, what we have done through this program, which is relatively new, in the past year and a half or so, we have impacted over 600 properties in the city of Columbus. That's a lot. Now, having said that, there are 1,000 more vacant and abandoned properties than when we started, which says this is an epidemic and it's a crisis. Now, while I have set aside $25 million to deal with vacant and abandoned properties in the city of Columbus, the White House has set aside $200 million for the entire nation. And the fact of the matter is we need help. This foreclosure crisis is an epidemic. It is real. It is impacting our neighborhoods in a very significant way. But I can point to neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood from Morris Road to the Northland shop, used to be shopping center and mall, to West Edge Business District, to King Lincoln District, to our announcement just this past week on South Parsons Avenue, to Columbus Coated Fabrics, to Campus Gateway that you just complimented us for, and the Ohio State University, of areas that we are trying to turn around. In fact, we are being successful. But there is still a lot more work to do. And what we're trying to do is get people to move back into these communities instead of driving through them, begin to invest in them and come back. And we're making some progress in that regard. So this is a passion for me. And we're making a difference. Now, to give you a context of where we stand as it relates to other communities, there are about 4,500 thereabouts of vacant and abandoned properties in the city of Columbus. In Cleveland, there's doggone near 25,000. Cleveland is smaller, half the size of the city of Columbus about. And in Cincinnati, it's about 21,000. Baltimore, which is also a smaller city than the city of Columbus, has 42,000. 42,000. Now, so, this is a major issue. I'm trying to deal with it. We're investing resources, attention, focus, and we're being productive at the same time. But having said that, we need help. This is a massive problem, far larger than what our resources, that we can use. We need help.
Okay. Adam, quickly, Adam, then we got to go on.
Absolutely. I recently visited New York, and you were talking about the attention that's required. And I'll tell you, I never felt safer in any city that I've ever been in, and it was because of the police presence. They didn't have police in cars. They had police on corners, on foot, you know, and that was just a marvelous feeling. And to be able to carry that to a city like Columbus would be fantastic.
Well, we are, and that's why we've been selected as the safest big city in America time and time again.
Have we indeed? Who is? I'm not aware of that. Who's selected?
Forbes.
Forbes Magazine.
Forbes Magazine.
Okay.
They did an empirical study of big cities above 500,000. Mm-hmm. That includes New York, and we have been elected as selected. Mm-hmm. As the safest big city in America. Now,
Mr. Mayor, you mentioned in your State of the City address that we had more police on the street than ever before in the city's history. But, of course, the city's also grown in size and population. Are we short police officers? Do we need more?
I think we do need more.
How many more?
First of all, we have to address, retirements. We're trying to hire as fast as we can, as many as we can. Now, the reality is that every time we add police officers, we have to pay for them. And we do. We are now how many police officers? Close to 1,900, over 1,900 police officers. And it depends on who you listen to. Some people say we need 500 more police officers. Well, that means we need 500 more police officers' money. We don't have that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we'll ever have that kind of money. Unless we don't fill the potholes, unless we don't pick up the trash, unless we do anything else in this city. But what we have to do is we have to utilize our police officers better. We have to use them smarter. And that means increasing the number of police officers while at the same time using them in a more productive way. For example, safety cameras will help because that's a tool they can use to help make a neighborhood safer. The strike force that we started a few years ago, about 3 years ago, has been extraordinarily successful at getting at violent crime and guns. The strike force just this past year has taken out, I think, 225 illegal guns off the street.
How does the strike force work, Mr. Mayor? In other words, is this a concentration of police officers in a particular time and place, announced or unannounced?
Unannounced. Okay. Unannounced. It is a group of police officers who, on a daily basis, will determine where there are incidents of crime and potential violence and drugs, and they will go to where they need to be, anywhere in the city. And they'll be present, sometimes in uniform, but oftentimes not. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to get the guns off the street and arrest the violent criminals.
Speaking of the police, but also relating that to potholes and other city expenses, yes. You know, we see the potholes all over town, and I know you're working to fill them. Do we need to increase the city income tax? Is that on the table to some extent? Hugh Dorian, you know, has said a while back that we ought to be taking a look at that.
We've pulled together a group of citizens, business leaders, community leaders, municipal financial people in a committee. And over the next 9 to 12 months, they're going to be looking at the city budget. And they'll also be looking at city revenue. They're looking at expenses and revenue. They will look at what we may need to be more efficient at or cut out entirely. And they'll also look at whether or not we need additional revenue. And if so, from where? What's a recommended source of revenue that they may propose?
So in a sense, is everything on the table here? I mean,
nothing's
being ruled out. Income tax increase,
that's right.
Garbage collection fee, it's all on the table.
It's all on the table. And I think that's the only way to do these things, is to be honest, look in the mirror, and say, what can we do better? And do better. And what can we, and if there's a need for revenue, how much and what's the source? We won't know what will be the results of that until about 9 or 12 months from now. And we'll just have to wait and see. And we're working with them. We have a number of people working with them. And it'll be a community-driven effort.
Mm-hmm. Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman is with us at 614-292-8513. Scott is joining us. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Mayor Coleman.
Hi.
Hi. Just a couple quick comments from what I've heard, and just a note. I'm a lifelong Republican, but I'm a big Mike Coleman fan. I think you're doing a good job.
Thank you very much.
Boy, you have a lot of axes to grind. You've got a lot on your table. And just a note, you talk about 11th and Cleveland. I own a small business, and we never went around there, and we regularly go there to do business now. It has been a very good impact for me directly. So just a side note.
Well, thank you.
City Center.
Yes.
I know. I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, it's kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the middle of the room.
Yes, it is.
Do we know, or can you enlighten us on what the current plan is? And just to kind of dovetail.
Yeah, let me try.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the City Center is the 800-pound gorilla. Let me take that back. It's a 1,600-pound gorilla in the room. And, you know, I have a lot of comments about it. You know, I could talk about how it was a mistake and all that, but here's the bottom line. We finally got control of it. Up until November 1st of 2007, the city of Columbus had no control over the future of City Center. And we had to jump through a lot of hoops, everything from evicting and lawsuits and all kind of things, and we ended up in control of it. And since then, now we are in control of it. We're in control of its destiny, and we will bring back something to that site. Now, what is the something? Well, we're still working on it, but we are making progress. What I can tell you is that we are putting together plans that will provide for the high street side of City Center to be transformed into a more retail opportunity. And that at the corner of High and Town, at that point, there will be a town square as well as retail outlets around this square.
They'll be facing the street so that people
facing
can see
street.
Them as they
okay. Yeah, it's yeah. Facing the street. And the idea here is to open it up, look for street pedestrian traffic, and do we have users now? We're not ready to announce any users, but we are developing a strong plan that I think is very doable. And there's going to be some hoops we're going to have to jump through on this. It's very complicated, but you know what? We're going to get this done. I believe that with good planners and good developers, and we have some good people that's working with us, Guy Worley, Downtown Development Corporation, Georgetown, other folks, we are working on this almost every day. I'm in a meeting about what's happening with City Center.
Scott, quick
follow-up.
It's
not quite soup, but we're making progress.
Okay,
we're
Scott.
One quick other thing if we have time. We're on the precipice because of what you've done and the trolleys and, you know, Nationwide Developing in Grandview Heights, you know, the arena. You're going to have a year-round thing with a Clipper Stadium. I mean, we've got a lot of good things going on downtown. Is there any plans to kind of include, like, the trolley system to go to the red brick area and have park and rides for bikes where people are very mobile? Or is the trolley just going to stay on High Street for now? Because that would assume be the end goal, to get people downtown, get them shopping and moving up and down High Street.
Yeah, I think we said, Mr. Mayor, earlier, the end goal is to have many more than just the High Street line. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, the end goal, ultimately. But we got to start somewhere, and High Street is our backbone, it's our spine. And I want to also change the terminology here. These aren't trolleys. Trolleys are those you see in San Francisco and New Orleans. These are sleek, contemporary, modern, look like a high-speed rail, although it isn't high-speed rail. And they are streetcars. We're going to actually change the name. We're going to ask the public for their input. What should we call this? We have a lot of ideas now, but we have some kind of process where the public can participate because this really isn't a trolley system. Those are the old clunkier things that kind of, you know, this mm-hmm. is a 21st century
can
form of
transit. Can we see a picture of these somewhere? Do we have
yes,
anything out of city
yes,
website?
I don't have any with me now, but we'll be advertising these pictures everywhere, and that'll be a big part of what we will try to change the thinking on this, okay, of what it is and what people may think about it. But the idea here is we have to introduce rail in the city. And in this introduction, the first line is the High Street line connecting the Ohio State University all the way south. Mm-hmm. And I expect it over time. I expect it to be successful because it has been successful in other cities. We will be looking to expand it in the neighborhoods. We'll be looking to expand it in other areas around the community. And we also need to be looking at light rail options beyond streetcar in the city as well.
Let's talk
in
a little bit about the curfew for kids.
Sure.
And different ages, different curfews. FOP president, the Fraternal Order of Priests president, Jim Gilbert, said the city should bring in offices on overtime to do it and staff a special unit. And how will this work? Do we have the officers to do it? What happens to the kids who are picked up? Where do they go? How are the parents informed? Or what do you do if you can't find the parents?
Well, let me just start. Those are four or five different questions.
Yeah. Give us a global response.
I don't know if I have a response to every question, but let me try to put it to you like this. We have a curfew law now. It exists. It hasn't been strictly enforced because our police officers have nowhere to take these kids. There's nowhere to take them. So what do? You leave them out there. And oftentimes what happens is that when, you know, 13-year-olds are out at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, they're doing things they probably ought not be doing for themselves or mm-hmm. for this community. And these little crimes have a way of turning into more significant crimes. And, you know, and we need to do something about it. Now, we have the strike force that's helped reduce violent crime in the city. Homicides down 24%. We're getting guns off the street. But some of these young folks, God bless them, but sometimes they're getting into things they ought not be getting into, which may be not the violent crimes, but some of the crimes that matter. And, you know, garage break-ins, you know, these other things. So what we're trying to do is nip it in the bud. And I think when I grew up in Toledo, my mother said, be home by a certain time. And if I was not home by a certain time, I paid a consequence. And I think what's happening these days is that young people are out. They're out late into the night, early into the morning, when they shouldn't be. And so what we're going to do is that we are going to start picking them up.
Take them to the downtown
YMCA. Beginning June 5th. Mm-hmm. And I want every parent, every child, everybody to know well in advance that beginning June 5th, we're going to start this. Now, my hope is that because we're going to talk about it every chance we can, hopefully we get some help with the media and neighborhood groups and ministers and churches and community leaders, that we're going to start this on June 5th, that by that time, they won't be out there, because we're going to educate the people that there is a curfew law, number one. Now, some people don't even know there's a curfew law because we haven't enforced it strictly. And number two, maybe by then we have a reduction of young folks out there. Now, what we'll do is we'll take them from wherever they are, drop them off. Doesn't take a lot of time. Drop them off at the YMCA. And at the Y, they'll be giving intervention services. And we're going to approach it in this way, kind of a three-strike rule. The first occasion that a young person's picked up, that young person and the parent or guardian are going to have to go to a workshop. And the second time, if that same person is picked up, that young person will have to perform some kind of community service. That same person on a third occasion will be open at that third occasion to be charged for a curfew violation, which is a misdemeanor. And the parent may be charged with parental neglect, which is also a misdemeanor. Now, the idea here is we never get to that third stage. The hope is that we're going to provide the whatever interventions we need along the way to avoid that third stage, which is, is a stage that where there is a criminal activity potentially. So
that's indeed it. Then, what about the idea of police? Do they have time to do this? The FOP president says the city should bring in officers on overtime staff, especially.
But we're working with the police, and the police command says that they're able to do this, and I'm going to trust the police command.
Okay, let us go to our next caller here. Just a few minutes left with Mayor Coleman. Ken is on the line. Quickly, Ken.
Yeah,
thanks for waiting.
I'm wondering about, we talk about housing, we talk about getting more students, making colleges more affordable for more Ohio students. But to do all this, they have to. We have to have jobs.
Yes.
Here in Columbus and Ohio.
Yes.
And, we can talk about NAFTA all we want, but the bottom line is that Ohio, Michigan, we're never going to get those jobs back that have been lost. And so we have to look for new industries.
That's correct.
And like Bitechs, StealthSim Research.
You're right on.
And but Ohio State and the city was working on, like a North Carolina has a triangle,
right,
which is a high-tech industrial park.
Right.
And they were. I was wondering what happened with that.
And we're working on it very hard, and we've been successful. In fact, we're actually retooling it and refining it because the original concept was actually larger than what we could rationally and reasonably handle. So what we're doing is we're focused on a specific area as between Ohio State and the city of Columbus, and we've come together in a great partnership, and we've had some successes. We're going to devote some city resources. Ohio State's going to devote some of its resources, and it won't be – it's called the 315 Research Corridor. And I think the original idea is that the corridor went from way up north to way down south in South Columbus, way east, way west. It was basically the whole city. And the truth is that what we need to do, and we've done this successfully before, is we identify a specific area off of Kinnear Road, north of Kinnear Road, that we're going to develop economically in the real estate and we're going to recruit and engage the business community to locate their new business and relocate businesses from elsewhere, but utilizing this great research engine called the Ohio State University, together with Patel, where we can transform ideas into products and products in the business. And we're going to do it right there at that location. So we've had some success already. We've had I've cut the ribbon on a couple of businesses within the past, 9 months or so. And I think that we're going to continue to be successful. Now, having said that, that's one focus, this research area. Another focus is a new focus that I talked about in my State of the City, and that's the aerospace and aviation industry. Columbus is becoming a player. We have Skybus. We just signed the dotted line with NetJets, where we've retained 2,000 jobs, another 800 to 1,000 jobs being relocated to Columbus. We have two other airport-related businesses that have recently relocated over there and started up. And what's happened is that we have developed a aviation cluster of new job opportunities. So my intention is to grab a hold of that and develop additional businesses to come out of that. For example, NetJets may have 50 different vendors from around the country. Why can't they locate their businesses right here in the city of Columbus at a certain site? Skybus has others as well. So the idea is to, we need everything from mechanics to pilots, from engineers all the way throughout this entire aviation industry cluster. I believe we can do it in Columbus, and that is the future, the new horizon of new job opportunities in our city, and we're going to expand upon that as well.
Okay, sorry we couldn't get all of your callers. Thanks for trying and calling in. Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman, thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Fred.
And on Monday, Ohio State University President Gordon Gee joins us. On Tuesday, Newsweek's Eleanor Clift is with us. And this is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.